Good afternoon. Welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. I guess I should start off the show today by saying that we will be discussing pornography, and it's a sensitive subject. We'll be using some frank language, so if you have young kids in the car, you might want to filter this out, maybe listen to it tonight before you share it with your kids. Well, porn in some flavor has been around forever. Generations of kids, mostly boys, grew up dying to get the chance to look at the latest Playboy. The 60s was a time of sexual revolution. The 70s saw the porn industry grow to new heights. The birth of the internet ushered in a whole new era in pornographic consumption, and the advent of mobile devices made porn accessible virtually anywhere by anyone at no cost. One of the largest growing concerns for parents in this high-tech age is their children compulsively or even having access to hardcore pornographic movies and images well before it's developmentally appropriate. Joining me today to discuss kids and internet pornography is filmmaker, author, speaker, and mother of two teens, Dr. Delaney Rustin. Dr. Rustin has done several documentary films, including one we discussed together on Line One, a film called Screenagers. We had a show back in April. And the award-winning film, Unlisted, A Story of Schizophrenia. Welcome to the program, Dr. Rustin. It's a pleasure having you join me again today.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you.
I need to remind listeners, we can be reached with your questions or comments in one of three ways. You can call us locally at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. If you're outside of Anchorage, you can reach us on our toll-free number. That's 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to reach us is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. You got to spell out Line1, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at alaskapublic.org. Okay, Dr. Rustin, can you, I guess before we get into our topic too much, can you tell us a little bit about MyDoc Productions and some of the films you've done? There's some really good stuff out there.
Oh, thank you. Well, my passion has really been around intersecting with the audiences that are general audiences with topics in the health world that I feel like are under-discussed. And for me, that's been a lot about mental health. And then as I started struggling with my kids around screen time, that turned into the film Screenagers, looking at the impact of screen time on kids today. And really, my focus is always, what are the solutions? How can we help parents to help kids find balance in this digital age? So those are some of the projects that I've worked on.
Can you talk a little bit about Unlisted, Story of Schizophrenia?
Absolutely. That was actually my first feature documentary, and it was because I unfortunately had a father with schizophrenia, and I had been hiding from him for many years because when I was trying to get my medical degree, he kept showing up off his medications in a really bad state, and I had to become enlisted in the phone book. And eventually, after hiding from him, I decided to reconnect. And I filmed that, and ultimately, that film was so much about how severe mental illness doesn't tear families apart, per se. It's really how the lack of supportive and comprehensive care really tears families apart. And that was one of the movements that I helped build around that film, around awareness and how to help families get more help in these type of situations.
That's a really important point because so many people struggle with this in isolation, and mental health, the challenges that it has for a family can be devastating. And there's help out there, and there's ways to navigate it and get support. So that sounds like a future show. I have to have you back to discuss that. All right. Are you still practicing medicine? I understand. I mean, I know you went to Stanford, trained as a physician. Are you doing medicine in your spare time?
My primary work in medicine, I've been faculty at the University of Washington and recently at Stony Brook, but my real passion is working with indigent populations. And so I've recently moved back to Seattle, where I'm recertifying to work in the community clinics that serve a lot of immigrant populations, homeless people. And people who struggle a lot, and I feel blessed to be able to work with them on trying to change behaviors and find new ways of approaching life in the setting of mental and physical challenges.
Sounds like you're doing this all the way around, this kind of work. It's good work. All right.
Thank you.
So let's go ahead and move into today. We're going to be discussing internet pornography and children. Not child porn, but that's a different show for a different day. But our kids and what they're watching and what they have access. So can you start us off with some of the numbers we're talking about when we say kids are watching pornography? Like, what's the age of first use, and how many out of 10? If I have a kid with 10 friends, how many are watching it?
Well, you know, it's a great question. And originally, when I was making Screenagers, I wanted to include inappropriate exposure issues. And then I realized that the film, I wanted it to be at schools all over the country, which it is doing. So I backed down on that, but I've been studying the issue and I've been filming people over the past 5 years. And I really wanted to, as I looked at the research, wanted to know exactly the question you're asking. I wanted to know what percentage of kids are using pornography, seeing it, and how often. And the amazing thing is how little research we have. So I'm going to give you an example. There was just last year a review of the data, 20 years of looking at teens, kids, and pornography. Only 75 studies met the kind of criteria that really looked at kids and teens. Most of those are in Europe, and most of those used the same sample size and then just, like, you know, varied something and then wrote a new paper. I mean, and so what we do know, I can tell you, is that somewhere around 10 to 20% of 10 to 12-year-olds have unintentionally seen pornography. We do know that by the end of high school, most teens, 70-80%, will say that they have seen it. Now, the interesting thing is how they even get this data. It's on telephone surveys, so that you can imagine that the kids are not going to even respond truthfully at times because their parents might be in the other room. There's very few studies that just do anonymous surveys of teenagers because of the ethical and concerns that review boards have of asking kids about their exposure to different things on the internet or just in general sexually explicit material. So I think that gives us a little bit. I would say one thing that I found helpful is that a study has shown asking college kids to look back, asking boys, on average, boys have seen pornography online at age 12, and by 16, the majority are seeking it out. So they're actually actively going to look for it. If you survey college boys, about half of them use it once a week, and about 3% of girls report doing so.
All right, so it's way more a boy problem than a girl problem, it sounds like.
Oh, yes, much more used by boys, but there's definitely girls who unfortunately have unintentionally seen it and have had been traumatized by that, or who use it, also excessively and feel like they want to stop but can't. So, you know, whenever we're looking at these population studies, we have to realize that the individual experiences are so varied in all of this.
Well, and if most of our boys are watching pornography, I mean, that, you know, poses the question, comes up for me, is that does impact girls at a very high rate if that's the expectation, if that's the boy's understanding of sexuality and what young women are supposed to be like. And there's all that pressure for girls to be sexy or hot. And I think that all ties in together.
Yes. I mean, you probably have heard the term pornified culture and how the pressure of girls to be hot and sexy has obviously always been around, but there seems to be a seepage of pornography into our culture that is really worrisome, that there's now girls who are shaving pubic hair completely off. As a physician, I see abscesses and other infections in those areas from ingrown hairs and whatnot. And that trend, in part, is thought to come from pornography itself, where that began in pornography with all of the hair extraction. There's other ways that girls are reporting that they personally feel really self-conscious in sexual encounters, knowing that the boy that they're with may well have been watching pornography, and the images that are so striking in those videos of breast implants and other body manipulations, lip implants, all of that. So there's a real concern about it. Another really big concern is the coercion that girls can feel because of pressure from guys that they should perform sexual acts that they might not be comfortable with, whether that's anal sex or oral sex, things that we're not sure of why are seeping more into the cultural norm, but the research does show a higher percentage of teenagers report engaging in these, particularly anal sex, than they did, say, 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, this bears true in my office. There seems to be, like, I don't know very many boys that I see, and these are not terribly, troubled young men, but there's not any 13 to 17-year-olds that are not accessing porn with some regularity, and certainly that would if they could. So let's, for parents out there that don't know this, aren't searching internet pornography sites all the time, like what's available, what are our kids watching, and what do they have access to?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, obviously things come unintentionally. Thank goodness it's a little bit less than it used to be, when we used to get all those pop-ups and all these awful things that would just inundate us. So that's a good news. But unfortunately, you can put something in like Pussycat, of course, and then get all of these things that can come up inappropriately. Or the other day I was watching the trailer for a documentary on girls and body image called Embrace. And at the end of the YouTube video, sure enough, there were naked people having sex right then and there. And if my daughter and I had watched that together, she's now almost 16, so that's okay. We would have talked about that. But, that's often how it is, this unintentional exposure. When they are looking for it, there's places like Pornhub. It's very easy to obviously find it. And that definition of soft and hardcore porn is a hard one now. It's difficult to say. But I would bring up a study that's an important one that took basically a little over 300 random scenes from popular porn sites and analyzed the content. And a shocking 90% of the content had some sort of physical aggression against women, so pulling hair, kicking, just some sort of pushing, and almost half of them had verbal aggression. And another study, before I just say more studies, because it's is just to say that that is really concerning. When I talk to young men about what they see in pornography, they definitely say, well, clearly it's about male domination. It's all about how does a male kind of dominate the whole scene. And that's concerning that many of them, before even any sexual encounters, that's the storyline they're being fed.
It's sexual violence against women and control sort of aspects of pornography. I mean, the stuff that is available online, I searched teenagers and porn, those words exactly, and I got some pictures and some images of, a sad kid in front of a computer, and then I got some stuff that would, kill my grandmother. Really graphic sexual acts that just popped up, and anybody has access to just click on those. So, that, as you said, inadvertent, and then it turns into something, or a kid searches a word that they hear at school, and it blows up from there. So I think it's important for parents to understand that it's pretty much anything. Why is it so? Why is it so easy? Why are there not filters? Why is there not a domain you know, in our country and what they can filter out and the technology that we have. Why are we not protecting young children from exposure?
It's an excellent question. Britain has decided to do just that, and it's supposed to go in effect actually in April 2018, in which sites that have this type of content have to have an age rating where you actually log in and prove that you're 18 or older to be able to access the material. And of course, there's a big cry from a free speech movement saying, wait, then they're going to have our data, and as well as anyone should be able to post anything. If they do this for this, how do we know it's not going to bleed over here? To me, as you say, why is it that it's become so ubiquitous and so little feeling like we can change it? I can't fully, I can't answer it. I can say that while there are net nannies, and on ScreenagersMovie.com we have lots of different ratings and information on blockers, there's problems with them, I think for younger kids at home, it's worth, if you have a mainframe computer, to try to put these on. Be patient, take time. It takes time, right. And you have to learn how to do it. But for the start, that can be a good thing. But often, and I'll tell a short story now, it's not the answer, of course. So one mother and daughter I filmed, the story was that the daughter had gone to a sleepover, and she was 10. And sure enough, a few, 11- and 12-year-olds pulled out their phone, and one of the 12-year-olds started showing them pornography on the cell phones, two women together in a shower and other things. And this little girl came home, and the mother didn't know what was wrong, but could tell she was visibly upset. And it wasn't until 3 days later that the girl told her. And when I filmed this girl telling me about it, you could just see her eyes water up, and she couldn't explain, but there was something that felt really wrong to her. And when I filmed her mother said, she's 10. I didn't know I had to start talking to her about this. She's only 10. So it, whether it's there or on the schoolyard, as more and more elementary schools are allowing cell phones, to be able to be kept in pockets. Something that I'm really going to be launching a campaign around cell phone use in middle school, so people can check that out. I just think that it's really important that we, and we'll get to this, I know, but how to talk to our kids at a younger age, assuming that it's impossible to block the chance of their seeing all sorts of material at any time in their lives.
Yeah, we'll get to that a little further into the show. If you're just tuning in to the program, my guest today is filmmaker, author, speaker, and the mother of two teens, Dr. Delaney Rustin. Today, we are looking at the issue of internet pornography and kids. So I would advise folks, if you're just tuning on or just turning on the radio, if you got little kids with you, you might want to find a different station, but it's an important conversation for kids of all ages, and that's what we'll get into that a little bit further. So if you have a question or a comment about today's topic, please don't hesitate to call in or email. As always, you can reach us in three ways. Our local phone number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. You can also call us toll-free from anywhere you might be listening at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to participate is by emailing your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, I want to get back to the efforts to safeguard kids. Real quickly, you mentioned some filters. Some of those things are available, but there's no way to do it because, as you said, playgrounds, friends' houses. I've already started running into that where, the 11-year-olds will go to other people's houses and there's access to iPads, and she's talked to me about things just like you're talking about that are starting to blur that, and she's 11. So why do we need to talk to them and not somebody else?
Mm-hmm. it obviously starts when they're really young to start having these conversations. And I think one of the things that's so important that we teach is to listen to their gut, you know. And, you know, what at an early age, if you see anything that just makes you uncomfortable, come to see us. As they get older, as we know, we're supposed to talk to our kids about sex and even porn. And the reality is anything that gives us anxiety is going to lead to avoidance. And when it comes to pornography, one of the big issues that we have is that we're worried we're going to introduce it. Maybe they haven't even thought about it or heard about it if we bring it up. So it's kind of like in medicine, you know, there's that idea if you bring up, oh, have you had any suicidal ideations, any thoughts, you know, maybe you're going to introduce that. And we get trained. We learn differently. We know that's not the case. But it's hard, your brain, it's hard to know that and to actually do the right thing and know that it's not going to introduce something to them. Kids are curious, however. So I would say that why it's so important that it comes from us is that if we start early to have these kind of awkward conversations, what's so wonderful is that even if they get older and they start eye-rolling as we continue to have the conversations, they're going to know that we can handle things, you know, that we can talk about oral sex and we can talk about coercion and all these difficult, you know, embarrassing things with them. And that we can handle it, that we can understand a little bit more than they think we understand, and that we won't negatively judge them. And that is what's so key about all of that, is that they might not come to us about all their different, you know, what's happening on the dating scene and all of the online social media, but we have at least done really the best we can to hope that they know they can come to us if something is really troubling them. And if we just wait for kids to ask questions, that just doesn't work. There's already this major taboo about talking about sexuality online, right? Just in sexuality and then obviously pornography and whatnot. I mean, we do not discuss it in our culture. They get that message loud and clear. So it's not that often that they're going to come and ask us.
You especially don't do it with your parents, right?
Exactly, right. Well, and the other thing that's just so important and so kind of unique with a time and being in the tech revolution is they're worried we're going to take away their devices if they come and tell us that they saw this online, right? Or that they've used it in this way, or they're feeling bad that they've used it in this way, whatever it is. There's also part of them that's like, wait, you know, I would be completely disconnected from my friends if I don't have this. So it's something to consider of why it's so key to have, you know, ongoing, short, calm conversations about it, and recognize that as parents, we're going to want to avoid it. But it's some things that we feel the most anxious about tend to be the things that are most important often when it comes to our kids. And that's frankly why I created Tech Talk Tuesday, is how to keep myself accountable, how to create a system that I will be beholden to, that each week I will talk about some screen-related activity with my kids, because otherwise months can go by and frankly we're just fighting as opposed to being proactive, talking calmly. And I think that's how you and I started talking about this today, is I had written on one of my Tech Talk Tuesdays, it's a blog that anyone can sign up for, and I wrote about how to talk to kids about pornography as one of the many that I've written there. So, I figuring out a system in place is so key.
Yeah, I saw that that post, and I was immediately sending you an email because it's a subject I've wanted to talk about a long time, for quite some time. Why is it that we as adults are so avoidant of having these conversations with our kids? What do you think where's that from?
Yeah, well, we get incredible negative reinforcer, right? I mean, you just try to talk to your teenagers about this stuff, and they hate it. Oh, my gosh, right? There's no reason to think it should be some pleasurable thing. Sometimes you're really, and I'll give you some tricks, though, that I have found useful with my own teenagers. I did this one with my daughter the other day. I gave her a pop quiz. And I asked her questions about, you know, risk of getting pregnant with pre-ejaculation, for example, if a person didn't come, or, you know, I just gave three different questions. I said, just answer these, yes or no. And she actually got a couple wrong, but she was really defensive about it. But I was so glad I got the correct answer to her. You know, these are the kind of things where in a pornified culture where porn is around and all of these videos are showing sex without condoms.
Yeah.
Like, okay, how am I going to kind of weave in these conversations with my teenager who's not excited about them, but I want to get that information to them because I can't rely on the school giving it to her or online or her peers.
Yeah, there are kids with lots and lots of questions. You know, I have clients that come in all the time and they're, you know, just in that transition phase. And they're saying to me, what does this mean? Because they don't feel comfortable talking to their parents or a friend of theirs did something. And those are tough conversations, but they're getting exposed. And I think the number one thing I want parents to know, and I think you're pushing it, is that as uncomfortable as it might be, it's an important thing to do, just like drugs and alcohol. Those conversations with kids early, it normalizes it. And, you know, it's not a big surprise when you try to drop it on them when they're 14.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, the thing is that the more we don't talk about it, then there's an implicit shaming, right? And the number one thing of anything that we're wired for is for sexual activity at some point in our lives, right? Biologically, to stay alive as a species. And I often start with younger kids talking about it in that light of it makes perfect sense that there is going to be these sexual urges of talking to preteens and whatnot. And I think that key is key because something I worry a lot about is when I've talked to teenagers and also to parents, this shame, this kind of uncomfortableness about enjoying and looking at pornography. And I think that is very concerning, as you know. Any time that there is shame, it's basically not talked about, and therefore it can very much blister into a major abscess that causes worse behaviors. So the key thing in all of this is to find ways. But, you know, what I want to make sure we really talk about, though, is the how to talk about. Because that's what's so hard about this. You know, to have conversations on this is really hard. I think that there's a lot of resources that we as parents need to be sharing more and more with each other. You know, the first thing I hope people will do when they get, you know, finished listening to this will become vulnerable themselves. Think to themselves, okay, who do I know that I could go to and say, hey, I'm struggling with how to talk to my son or daughter about this? And then, or offer if they learn something from this, go to tell a friend. Be vulnerable in that you're bringing up a taboo subject, but recognize that the upside can be so key. And what's really, you know, if you ask teenagers, there's a big survey done in England, how many of them thought that schools should teach safe social media? A good 80% of them immediately said yes, yes. I mean, a lot of teens, like you're saying, want more information. The problem is how we do it. We tend in schools not to teach health well because it's, you know, it's not interactive. But most importantly, I think it's because we're not having older peers do it. I think teenagers, you know, if you had senior high schoolers talking about different things, even, you know, sexual explicit material in a curriculum, you know, that was reviewed and whatnot with 9th and 10th graders, they're going to listen and learn a lot more than when they're eye-rolling at the teacher who's saying stuff that they just feel like the teacher doesn't understand. So, you know, as we rethink how do we teach health, we absolutely have to incorporate physical health in a much broader and more interactive and effective way.
Well, it's at about age 13 when peers become the primary influence in kids' lives and parents become less important. Just before the break, we've had Sam holding. You're on line one with Dr. Rustin. Go ahead.
Hi. Prince, you had asked why are adults uncomfortable talking about these kinds of topics. And my sister and I were talking to my niece in my mom's presence about sex. And I turned to my mom and I said, Mom, why didn't you ever have this kind of a conversation with us? And she looked at me and said, because my mom never had that conversation with me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The more that we do this with our children, that we're giving them the experience and the tools and the language to do this with their children. So absolutely, it's one of the positive things right now is that we're really being called on as a country to step up to the plate, to have a communication revolution, to say we can try to continue to be quiet, but you know what? Kids are going to go to YouTubers if we don't talk. They're just going to tell each other. They're going to go in secrecy in their bedrooms and feel shame. You know, all these reasons why we should figure out how to do this better, and we can. We can keep talking to each other. So I'm so glad you brought up that. It's such a powerful way to remind us why we have to do this hard work of learning to do something we haven't, most of us never had conversations, healthy conversations about.
Yeah, Sam, I think that's a great point, and I appreciate the call. It's kind of like I think about child pornography and molestation the way it was, you know, many years ago, is that secrecy and that shame, and we keep things in the family, within the walls. So that's changing. Hopefully we're having more open conversations with our kids so they don't have to deal with this alone. We're at the halfway point in our show, so we're going to go ahead and take a short break. If you have a question for Dr. Rustin or something you would like to share about today's topic, please don't hesitate to call in or email. Our local phone number is 550-8433, or you can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way is to email your questions or comments to line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we'll return to our conversation about kids and internet pornography. I'm Prentice Pemberton.
I am David Rudolph, a retired doctor of internal medicine out in the valley. I am so thankful for my years of confidential patient contacts and for countless hours of Alaska Public Media's thorough, honest radio and TV programming. Since listening in the 70s through armed forces stations overseas and continuing on arrival to Alaska in 1983, I have relied on their in-depth news and programming. Always a supporter and now a sustaining member, this is one area where I did not reduce my contribution due to, quote, fixed retirement income, end quote. I'd rather live a more frugal, healthier lifestyle than not have Alaska Public Media. Please continue to contribute to this station's endeavor to be a beacon of healthy truth in the murky world we live in. Call 550-8484 or use the website alaskapublic.org for your contributions. Thank you.
Welcome back to Line 1, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your co-host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just joining us, Dr. Delaney Rustin is my guest, and our topic is kids and internet pornography. If you have young children in the car, or you're just tuning in and you're not sure if your kid's ready to listen to this, the content, maybe listen to it tonight, and you can listen to it later if you think it's appropriate. If you have somebody else you can that you'd like to listen to the show, another parent, you can catch the rebroadcast of Line 1 tonight at 8, and you can also podcast it, available about 24 hours after, or listen to it along with all of our past shows in our program archives. I want to remind listeners that questions and comments are a welcome addition to our program here at Line 1, so we like hearing from you. Our local phone number is 550-8433, or you can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to get on the air is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. Please remember the show repeats tonight at 8 p.m., so if you're listening on Monday evening, you'll be hearing a taped recording, and we won't be accepting phone calls. Okay, I guess coming back, I got a couple of calls over the break, so we'll go ahead and take them in order. Carol, you're on Line 1 with Dr. Rustin. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you, and thank you, Dr. Rustin. I listened to what you had to say, and I'm a a child advocate for over 50 years, and I've studied children all over the world as far as addictive personalities, as far as, you know, the technological addictions. And one of the things I have learned is, especially when it comes to sexual addictions or the curiosity that we all experienced, even females experience that, when it goes beyond, I think it's part of that genetic compound in all of us from a very primitive time that is there for reproduction. And the rest of it hasn't caught up. Social norms dictate that this is not supposed to be acceptable. So we're in a real dilemma of how to interact with these children to let them know that certain things are acceptable. It's a delicate, very delicate situation, but it has to take place.
Absolutely. Well, that, you know, gets into the question of, is problematic pornography use an actual addiction problem? And as you alluded to, that there are a certain percentage of youth, of young people, who are using it to the point that they actually want to stop, and they find that they can't. And as of right now, the, you know, basically the Bible of psychiatry, the DSM-5, has not included hypersexuality, they call it, disorder, as an actual illness, because a big part is because there is such a norm, the different, you know, normative layout of what people's sexual appetite is, and they're worried of, you know, defining what is normal and not normal. But I absolutely feel that if somebody is using it, and I've had students come up to me as a teacher to medical students and say, one person I'm thinking of in particular, of how he was struggling with this problem of overusing pornography. He wanted to stop, and he could not, and he felt really awful about himself. And I think that, you know, when there are, you can't stop using it, when you have negative outcomes in your life that are happening, this really warrants interventions, of course. So I'm glad you brought that up, and thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Carol. So that gets ahead of us a little bit, but not too much. The internet or porn addiction thing, we're talking about compulsive online use of pornography. And for many teenagers, it is compulsive, and it is addictive if you look at the behavioral definitions of interfering with life. Kids are dropping out of, you know, activities after school. They're craving access to it. They're sneaking. They're lying. Is pornography addiction a thing, or is it in line with gambling? Because sex seems to be a deep biological drive, and if you trigger that over and over again, like, what's the impact on the brain, the adolescent brain especially?
Yes, anything that is, you know, dopamine rich, so affecting the nucleus accumbens, the part of our brain that is a reward center where dopamine gets secreted, that is always risky for excessive use. And the interesting thing is, for whatever reason, when people are younger and exposed to dopamine-rich experiences, it helps to lay down the track deeper in the brain of which that their brain wants to reenact that exposure to a substance or a behavior greater than if a person were to start that activity or drug later in life. So we think it's because as the teenage brain is particularly plastic, it's malleable, so that the actual substance or behavior is creating a larger groove per incident, if you think of it as like a track, and it's harder than to not veer in that direction. And it's important. There is greater risk of using excessive pornography in a way that is being detrimental to a person's well-being and other factors in their life. There's other risks that come with it. I mean, there have been studies to show that increased sexual aggression can be the result of seeing frequent pornography use. It's an increased chance of having this sexual aggression for those who see more and more pornography. There's also an increased chance of being sexually dissatisfied, young men in their 20s who are having difficulties with erection and whatnot because a correlation with pornography use, needing more and more, developing tolerance. Not great studies. You know, many people who use don't develop this. We don't, you know, we're not great at the research to know who's going to. But there are risks. These are just some of the risks that come up with the use that's important for us to talk to boys and girls about. And like you said, to make it normative, to just talk about it as biology, as a part of the human experience. These are things that can happen.
Yeah, the intense thing about internet pornography, and you mentioned the dopamine, like just triggering whatever it is, and kids describe just being able to go online and click and click and click and get that little dopamine burst over and over and over and over. I tell, you know, parents that kids are practicing what they're going to do as adults, and they're perfecting how they cope with stress. And if they're developing a mind that is addictive with substances, I mean, there's a reason that 90% of adult smokers started before they were 20 years old. And that's because of those tracks that you're talking about. All right, I want to get to back to the phones. Don, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. I'm going to be as brief as I can. Title 11, Chapter 61, deals to a large extent with pornography in Alaska law. There is a section in here that defines what pornography is by law. Some parents might find it to be a real eye-opener. Basically, what I've got in my hand is a little pocket guide put out through LexisNexis and also put out by Pocket Press. It says Pocket Guide to Alaska Criminal Law. This one is for 2017. And they've also got a web connection on here at through Pocket Press, www.pocketpress. They also have some toll-free phone numbers on here. One of them, if I can give it real quick, is 888, looks like 237-2110. And it gives one a quick understanding of what they're up against as far as any accusations or going to court, what they might be faced from the standpoint of the law itself as far as prosecution goes. And it really gives one pause to think about opening your mouth to a youngster or telling him about anything, whether they're your kid or not. So I'm going to leave it at that. I got to get moving here and get on to some other things. Thanks again for your time. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Don. Yeah, I would say that for any parent to familiarize yourself with the laws locally and what is pornography and what's not and what kind of troubles are out there from a legal perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I do want also for all of us to be talking to our girls and boys about the reality that somebody might show you things on a computer, and that's a real red flag. Like, you know, don't, if anybody, an older, you know, teenage boy or somebody starts to show you things you're not comfortable with, you know, come and let me know right away. And that's really important because this unintended exposure sometimes does come from, you know, extended family or neighborhood kids. So there's another reason why there's no excuse not to talk about sexual content on the internet with our kids. Absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of times 14-year-old boys don't think twice about showing a group of 12-year-old girls some pornography. They think it's kind of funny. They're not really thinking that through all the way.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and I think the key thing, too, when we talk about how to reach our young men in this country is that they're not just a ball of hormones that have no, you know, ethical principles and no self-control, right? I mean, there's TED Talks that talk about these issues. There's a great one by Peggy Ornstein who did the book Girls and Sex, And I showed it to my son. He was a senior in high school, and then he, without my even saying anything, he ended up sending the link to a bunch of his friends who are girls. It's a very much looking about how the porn culture and others issues in our society is affecting girls and their sexuality. And, you know, there are many, when we treat guys with respect and get their input about what, you know, why they could also see the reasons why pornography could not be the healthiest choice at times, or, you know, how it is challenging to have a romantic relationship with someone, but could they envision or have they had that, and how much better the sexual, any type of sexual or physical encounter can be in those settings. So I think joining with boys in all of this is crucial too.
Yeah, our young men are very, very important in this conversation because they drive much of it. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Dr. Delaney Rustin. Our topic is children and their use of internet pornography. If you have a question or a comment for Dr. Rustin in the next 5 minutes or so, you can call us at 550-8433 or toll free at 1-888-353-5752. You can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. Elise, you've been on the phone for a while. You're on line one. Go ahead.
Hi there. Say, I had a question for, actually, I just wondered if Dr. Essen wanted to comment around what's happening in the state school system. I know that this year is the implementation for the first time of the Alaska Safe Children's Act, and I'm not sure what you know about that, but I'd be curious to know how you feel about its rollout and if you feel that the school system is prepared and ready to help handle all of these discussions around pornography and more.
I haven't looked into or heard about exactly what Alaska is doing. You know, as you know, a lot of the efforts in the past 10 years have really been focused on bullying in general and then cyberbullying, and that's mm-hmm. been that's been the real focus. And I think that there's a lot of discussion about how are we going to deal with sexting and coercion and mm-hmm. as well as the inappropriate online exposures. But I haven't seen that curriculum in particular, but it's one of the areas that I'm really interested in working with parents, administrators, teens themselves, to how to create great curriculum. So I will would love to hear from you if you know any more details.
Yeah, it seems like there is a lot. They're trying to make it very age-appropriate, starting with safe touch, et cetera, at the early grades on up. And then, but what it does, I think, touch on a little bit of pornography and such. But mm-hmm. as you know, not everybody is listening to NPR. And so I really would value your input in a systemic way as to how we can better have these conversations in schools and in other places that would be helpful to every child.
Absolutely. I agree. I would love to be a part of it. And I think that there's no excuse. The thing that I fear is we had a big push, as you know, earlier on, 70s, 80s, to have media literacy. And mm-hmm. now when screen time is even more apparent, we have not created that time in our curriculums. You know, it's fascinating, but the research shows that kids who are shown, for example, if you tell kids that the sugar industry is doing all these nefarious things to kind of hide how much sugar is in things, and then the next day you offer them a sugar treat or a vegetable treat, those kids who learned that they were being manipulated were less mm-hmm. likely to choose a sugar treat than kids who did not get that messaging. And the same we could do for media. You know, that the ways that pornography, for example, the number of people who've been abused as children, the girls who are in these things, you know, that the ways the violence against women in these videos, you know, you can be just kind of matter of fact. This study shows this and that for older teens. That would be completely appropriate, or media literacy in other ways. So I will look into that. I think it's great that the entire state is adapting this, and I hope, and I'm working with other schools talking about what transformation is down the line. So thank you so much for bringing this up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Elisa. Those are really good points. I think it's important that we start. This is part of that process, is having a discussion on NPR where there's a lot of teachers and policymakers and parents who are involved. And let's not bury our head in the sands and you know, and pretend that this isn't happening. I got a question here. It's a little bit off, but I'll read it anyway. It's email. It says, "Hello. Is there any is there an age that pornography is acceptable for viewing?" It's a an Alaskan who's not ashamed to say that she enjoys pornography. Is there healthy pornography viewing, Dr. Reston?
I think that's just a person's personal view, as if it's effective in their life. Is it, you know, having something that they feel okay about and it's in line with their integrity of their values? That's ultimately what's very much important. And no one can say, you know, yes or no to that person or a given age.
Yeah, I guess it does come a lot down to personal beliefs, and that's our country. You're allowed to access things that are legal, and if it works for you. But that's an interesting question. And does it interfere with your life and all those addictive sort of things that apply? If it's interfering in your life, then there may be a problem. Back to the phones real quick. One more. We have Don. You have a question about is it manga and anime?
It's more of a comment. I've adopted a lot of kids who were exposed to really childhood trauma, and some of them have been molested. And one of them really got into anime and manga, and I started just going with them through the computer searching manga, and was really surprised to find that it's almost a direct link from anime or manga, the regular cartoons that are harmless, to anime porn, which is very exaggerated, kind of like cartoon figures, and very often violent. And, you know, he and I had a long talk about why I was uncomfortable with him even looking at manga, because it, even if he wasn't searching for anime porn, it would just pop up constantly.
Wow. It would pop up for him to then go into it and play, to watch it?
Yeah, it's kind of like if you type in whitehouse.com, that's a well-known porn
yeah.
site. You know, so, and once it starts yeah. popping up, it keeps popping up. And I want to caution parents, because the illustrated books or the graphic books are really a big thing right now. But when you get on the internet and you're looking at graphic novels, there is no filter between mm-hmm. what is pornographic and what is not pornographic. And it was kind of a sad thing for me to realize that, you know, I couldn't even have them looking for, you know, manga without exposing them to porn.
Exactly. No, it is, you know, and I, you said that it's affect you. I mean, the thing that I wanted to make sure we talked about today is just as a parent, as a foster parent, as any type of care provider, when we learn or think about the possibility of our loved ones, our kids, watching pornography, there's something very emotional as a parent. And, you know, I've heard it over and over from parents, you know, whether it's loss of innocence or just who are they connecting with, what are they learning. It's a very emotional situation, and I think that's why it's important to, you know, learn from people like you who are coming on the show to say that you've had the conversation. I'm wondering, did you feel like you connected with him, or anything that went particularly well or difficult with that conversation?
Well, I'm pretty blunt with all of my kids because I have so many that have been exposed in early childhood to some really bad stuff. So I think we connected, but unfortunately he did travel down that path and does not have a healthy sexual life and mm-hmm. is currently incarcerated. And, you know, and I look back and I don't think there's anything I could have done different except for to keep him off the internet altogether. And, you mm-hmm. know, I have sons with a disability who recently showed me a new app that's, I forgot what it's called, Friends or something like that. And there was, you know, some pretty graphic stuff on there just scrolling through. And one was a very large man part. And I looked at my son and I'm like, do you really want to be on this app trying to make friends when this kind of thing isn't filtered out like it is on Facebook, let's say? But it's constant. There's always a new app. There's always a new way for them to get And they're not really particularly even looking. They're just looking to make a friend, you know, to talk about anime. And it is, if it's not a filtered website, it's there. It's just there.
Yeah.
Well, and that's kind of the tragedy of the internet. It's a tragic misuse of technology.
Yeah. I think an effective way, too, depending on the age of the kid, but I mentioned this earlier about waiting for kids to ask us questions, you know, particularly around this topic. It's very rare that they do. But asking them kind of questions like, have you ever wondered why girls in these videos have the, you know, a waist the size of my wrist? Have you ever wondered why they always have the guy, you know, yelling as opposed to having them asking a question in a gentle voice? And just real kind of asking those questions can draw out sometimes in youth answers that they might not otherwise have come to even have the discussion with you. And what I love once Peggy Ornstein said to me is her daughter, you know, they're in the magazines section of the store, and there's all these, like, you know, covers of these unrealistic women, airbrushed and everything else. And the mother is constantly, she's a writer, Peggy Ornstein, is saying, you know, look at this image, how could this be, et cetera. And she just wants to know that voice is in her daughter's head. Even if her daughter's rolling her eyes has heard it a lot of times, she knows that when her daughter goes to look at those images, she has that voice questioning, like, is that real? Is that what I value? How much is that person having to do to kind of be this? What's authentic? So just, again, another trying to think of ways we can have these conversations. And my heart goes out to you with kids who come from difficult backgrounds. They are at greater risk of using greater amounts of screen time and of pornography, and trying to find alternatives, like you were saying, like, how do you really keep them all busy and have access to after-school programs? Well, in Screenagers, we talk about the intensely sad reality that 40% of kids do not have access to after-school programs. So they are coming home and being online and being exposed to all sorts of things. So thank you so much for bringing this up.
All right. We are running out of time rapidly. Any parting thoughts for our listeners, Dr. Rustin?
Well, I do hope they, if they want to find more information, I've written more about how to talk to teens and kids about sexual material online at screenagersmovie.com, particularly under the Tech Talk Tuesday section. There's stuff on sexting and conversations with parents, parenting apps, monitors we talked about. So, but the key thing is really to be vulnerable as a parent. If you're having a conversation with your kid about these things, be vulnerable. Say to them, this is hard, this is awkward.
All
be
right.
As real as you can be, and it makes a difference.
Okay, thanks for joining me, Dr. Rustin. I look forward to future conversations. Appreciate
Thank
your
you
time.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you.
Please check out the variety of links we have made available on today's topic. That's on our show page. And check out Tech Talk Tuesdays at screenagersmovie.com. It introduces a new topic each week that promotes a great discussion points. Next week, Dr. Woodard returns and we'll dig into moral psychology. Please join him next Monday, October 16th at 2:00 for a discussion about the impacts social media might be having on the development of morality and social norms. For all of us at Line One, thanks for taking the time to join us today. Until next time, I'm Prentice Pemberton.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.